Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Leander Unati Lewis Nyao, but everybody calls me Unati!
And
Jeremy Cobb, but Terry Gamble calls me Tenemy Cobb. And yes, that is a Tenet reference. We're bringing it back, baby.
Damn it!
Brought it back again.
Not another one. Not another one.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Terry. You helped me bring it back yet again.
No!
Well, speaking of large-scale movies, a great way to segue into our guests today. We have two guests on the show today.
I am unbelievably excited to say that on this week's episode, we don't just have three, we don't just have four, we have five halflings on the show. That is right. I am delighted to welcome Merian Pippin, Dominic Monaghan, and Billy Boyd themselves. They have come to talk all things nerdy, including their brand new podcast, The Friendship Onion. So what are we waiting for? Let's get into this week's episode.
Meow.
Dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe? Woof!
Let's make them even more black!
Cake glitches and bitches.
Lands in the cusp of a teaspoon?
Oh, no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
We're about to get into something real big now.
I always love that drop.
Always love the drop. So always great. Drop. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. Dominic Monaghan and Billy Boyd. So first of all, we wanted to ask you guys, we talk about all things nerdy on this show, from films and Dungeons and Dragons. So we wanted to ask you, what is the one thing that you like to nerd out about the most? So it could be anything. It could be a particular thing. It could be music. It could be football, theatre, anything.
I mean, I'm very, very nerdy about a lot of things. I think one of the things that I'm the most nerdy about is that I nerd out on lots of things. I'm very nerdy about football, Manchester United. I'm nerdy about League of Legends. I'm nerdy about movies. I think probably the thing that I'm the most nerdy about, because not that many people are nerdy about it with me, are insects. I'm a massive insect nerd.
Yeah.
I love insects.
Oh, cool.
They're so cute.
So, yeah.
You know, just do a lot of deep dives into trying to figure out what things are and what new science there is out about insects. In fact, I'm now nerdy enough about insects to know that based on the certain time of the year and the weather in that local area, if someone asks me online what a certain insect is, very often I won't even need to open up the photograph to identify it. I'll know that if there's been a recent rainstorm in Los Angeles and it's between September and December, there's a 90% chance that it's going to be a potato bug. If someone finds something in their bathroom and it's kind of after the hot of the summer and not quite into the cool of the winter, I know it's probably going to be a house centipede or a silverfish. So my nerdy based knowledge on insects is pretty epic now.
William. That's incredible.
Yeah, that was.
I am a geek for animals.
Yeah, it's very geek.
You might be interested to know, Dom, that I am currently in Cincinnati, Ohio, which is about to, in possibly the next week or so, be consumed by the 17-year cicada plague.
Right.
For those of you who don't know, basically, if you're not familiar with the animal, the insect known as a cicada, it looks like if somebody took a fly, made it like about an inch long, and then gave it evil red eyes, and then like let it buzz really, really loud.
Well, that
sounds
fun.
Essentially,
yeah.
There's a 13-year variety. Well, there's like a yearly variety, but there's also a 13-year variety and a 17-year variety. The 17-year brood that basically comes out of the ground every 17 years, trillions of them, get everywhere for like a month or two, and then mate. All of them die, and all of the larvae burrow back into the ground and wait another 17 years.
Yeah.
Wow. And it's just about to happen in the next couple
of
months.
I love cicadas.
So we're just, at an orgy without anyone's consent. just invited now. Really annoying. That's what's happening. Great. Thanks, nature. Thanks for that.
In very, very hot countries that people go to, a lot of times when they hear what they think are crickets or grasshoppers in the day are actually cicadas. They make that very loud kind of, you know, screeching, hissing noise. If you look at those trees in those local areas in that 17-year pattern, you can see a dramatic growth in that year that the cicadas come out because they're taking all the nutrients from the dead cicadas and go through a massive growth spurt. Anyway, we'll
have really cool.
Geek about.
Mainly cicadas.
I'm with you there, Billy.
I like Star Trek. I'm a big Trekkie.
Big Trekkie, okay.
Yeah. Especially the Next Generation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, TNG. Yeah, I was going to say, you Nazi's a bit of a Trekkie yourself, so.
good to hear.
I watched like 5 episodes of the original series and really, really liked it, and then just never actually finished it. But I was like, this is great!
And
everybody's telling me this is cheesy, but this is awesome!
You haven't seen anything else? Deep Space Nine?
No, I
haven't. Voyager? Nothing.
No, shockingly, I've seen Wrath of Khan. I've seen Wrath of Khan.
Oh,
Wrath!
We've all seen Wrath of Khan. Could you watch?
Yeah.
Babylon 9, is it?
5.
Could you watch Babylon 5 or Deep Space 9, independent of everything else, and still get a lot of enjoyment out of it? Or do you need to know the canon?
Well, for one thing, Babylon 5 isn't Star Trek canon.
I am sorry.
That's an absolute disgrace.
Wow. How could you not know that, Dom? Honestly, I mean. Come on, man.
Yeah, you can watch any Star Trek without knowing the other ones, but there might be little things that you miss.
Right. And out
it's not
of
as
all
enjoyable.
Of those series, what's your all-time favourite?
The Next Generation.
Is that the Patrick Stewart one?
Yeah.
Make it so!
Oh, exactly.
That's the one. That's you've heard it here. You've got to watch that one first. That's the one you've got to do. Cool. So going kind of further into your fandom, we always ask like a bit of like an origin story whenever we get guests on this pod. And I'd be interested to know, like, what was your like introduction to fandom? Were you like born a nerd, or were you kind of introduced to sort of nerdy stuff like Star Trek or things like that? Like when you did like acting projects and things, like how did that start for you? That like journey, I guess, of being sort of getting into sort of nerdy thing.
Do you mean any level of nerdiness, or do you mean nerdiness in terms of like Lord of the Rings?
I guess like fandoms and things like that. So like I guess things like Lord of the Rings or Star Trek or kind of like, you know, sort of fan culture as a
entomology,
as a
I guess. Yeah. I'm sure there's a big entomologist community.
There is.
It's probably Star Wars. Yeah. I think for me is the that was the first time there was a movie that everybody sort of for me bought into that world and was like oh, we've got lightsabers and we're making up our own characters. And, you know, I would definitely say that Star Wars somehow hit that more than any other film that I'd seen to that point. Even things like Harryhausen movies, you know, even though I loved them, it wasn't a thing that people then, you know, went into the school playground and started playing those characters or, you know, inventing their own stuff. Star Wars, I think, was the one that kind of was the first sort of fandom. Yeah.
Mm. Started that almost like cultural moment, right? Mm-hmm. Like that viral moment that kind of got everyone talking about stuff.
Yeah,
which I guess seems to happen a lot these days, right? Because social media just
much more,
whips everyone up into a frenzy, you know?
That was something strange and different, I think, when it came out.
Yeah, so many films now are only happening because they're trying to build franchises and trying to build these worlds, which I think is a real shame in a lot of ways because, you know, there are so many great merits to independent cinema, and it is being squeezed out a lot Hell by yeah. these massive studios saying, unless we can justify 3 or 4 movies out of this thing, we're not going to start it, which, you know, that kills things like Labyrinth or The Dark Crystal or
yep.
Goonies yeah. or, you know, I'm sure Raiders of the Last Ark didn't think it was going to be a trilogy until yeah. it became a yeah. success. So same as Billy, really. Mine probably wasn't Star Wars initially. I think mine was probably something like Jason and the Argonauts or Sinbad or The Dark Crystal or something like that. I was a big kind of film fan as a kid, but up very early at the weekend, as most kids are. Mm-hmm. And my dad would bring home a video from the video shop on a Friday night for my brother and I to watch in the morning. And my dad and mum would tell me years later that I would get up before my brother, watch it. Then my brother would come downstairs. We'd watch it again. Then my mum and dad would come downstairs. My brother would go out and play. And I would strike at my mum and dad to watch it another time. So I'd watch it 3 times in a row. And then for the rest of the weekend, be constantly asking my dad to watch it over and over again. So I think something like, was it Jason and the Argonauts where the skeletons kind yeah. of stand yeah. up and get yeah. to a sword fight? Yeah. I think maybe something like that. And that's Harryhausen, right?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Pete yeah. Jackson was a massive Harryhausen fan. Huge Harryhausen fan, and Richard Taylor over at Weta.
For anyone in Edinburgh at the moment, yes, there Edinburgh. Is a great Ray Harryhausen sort of display at the...
Exhibition,
that's the word.
You're welcome.
one of the museums in Edinburgh. I can't remember which one.
Ooh.
But it looks
There's
fantastic.
A few.
I've
a
only
few.
Seen it online, but I would recommend going to see it. You could probably see Amazing. One of the skeletons.
Oh, brilliant. I bet they're tiny in real life, aren't they?
They're double the size of human form.
Wow.
That's actually pretty impressive.
Whoa, that, wait, they're that, double yeah. the size of a person, those skeletons?
I mean, in Billy's head.
I may have made that up.
Okay, because okay. I was like, whoa, that's crazy. Whoa. They built these gigantic skeleton monsters. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're probably, yeah, Jeremy just booked tickets in that time to go to Edinburgh. And he was like, there's immediately going to be disappointed now when he arrives.
Real quick. Yeah. Wait a second, everybody.
I mean, that's just good advice generally. You should just go to Edinburgh because it's gorgeous. A beautiful place.
Yeah. Fantastic city.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah, best time in Edinburgh. Amazing. So, well, one question which I think a lot of our listeners would be interested to know is, I think, Dom, I've seen some evidence potentially of you playing Dungeons & Dragons, but I'm wondering, have you actually, the two of you, ever played Dungeons & Dragons? And if so, how much? What's been your intro to that world so far? I'm just interested to know.
Yours will be a shorter answer, won't it?
Mine will be shorter. It will be, I have never played it. And also, I don't actually quite understand it, even when I see people playing it, or when Dom tries to explain to me what it is. I still don't get it.
I've tried to explain it a couple of times to Billy, because I actually think Billy would really like it if he played it. But, you know, you kind of need a dungeon master to know what they're doing. I bought the whole... I mean, I played it a little bit at school, a tiny amount. There was a room in our school where Dungeons & Dragons geek players played, and I was in between two worlds playing football, but every so often kind of looking through the window thinking, well, that does look fun, but I'm not sure if I should do it. And every so often I would go in and find out. Or I'd do that thing where maybe that particular group has gone to class and I would walk over to the table and see the remains of a game and be like, oh,
what is this world?
Dice and a map and oh, there's a dragon and oh, a cave. Oh, and, you know,
I'm so there with you being caught in that world between like football and like there's that really like toxic part of you when you're like a teenager and you're like, oh no, but it's not cool to play Dungeons and Dragons, so I need to like ignore that part because I'm into football. And then, man, I wasted so many prime years of playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah,
like I could definitely have done both. I do both now. So
I think it's a really brilliant way for anyone, but especially young people at formative times in their life, to build the confidence to be able to create a story, you know, write a story or work their way through the narrative of a story in their head. Because obviously you've got the dice rolling random elements of stuff, but alongside the dungeon master and the players, there needs to be this kind of collaborative mindset of we're all going to be part of keeping the story in the air, you know, so you can't kind of back yourself into a corner and say, oh, here comes a goblin, he stabs all of you, you're all dead, end of story. You have to say, well, he tries to stab me, but I jump up and then a rock falls down on his head, you know, all that kind of the yes and element of storytelling, I think is brilliant in Dungeons and Dragons. The design of the game, I think, is incredible. About halfway through COVID year, I was approached by a company online that said, hey, maybe you're having the same year that we're all having, kind of isolated and stuck on your computer. If you are and you want to play Dungeons and Dragons with us, let us know. And I said yes, and we did a little kind of six-week adventure. I played a halfling, interestingly. And
Very good.
I mean, Billy would have loved it. We were trying to save a village that the nefarious characters in the game had been dragging a mountain that was aloft in the sky over the village to kind of shield the sun from the village. And we had to go up to that mountain and cut the binds of the mountain so it could come back down to the earth. And we were flying on these like massive deer and all this kind of stuff. It was amazing. It was a brilliant experience.
That's incredible. That's exactly cool. It, though. That's exactly what D&D
Anything
is about.
Is
like, you have to play it, Billy. You've got to play it. Like, I feel like...
I don't want to get too into this because you guys know what you're doing and I'll be very basic.
We have new players. No, we have new players listen to this. We can get into it.
Like, could we just play it just now? Like, do you need anything?
Let's go. I've got dice. Let's go.
Yeah. Because you just need dice.
Do you want...
And then everything else is made up.
Yeah.
It's
you
basically
don't
like,
buy a box. You can buy a box, but it's not.
You can do if you want to, but it's like it's absolutely a shared imagining space for you to all enjoy together. I actually liken it a lot to acting. I think when you get into like a rehearsal room, it's like a really good rehearsal room. Is what I liken playing D&D to.
But what makes it Dungeons and Dragons? What makes it not just you making something up? Is there rules?
There are some rules.
Yeah,
I think initially
are.
Dungeons and Dragons is based on the fact that very classically in the game, you might find yourself in an underground cave or in a dungeon. And there might be dragons. But in the recent Dungeons and Dragons that I played, no dragons, no dungeons. It's just mythical characters. You roll the dice based on what's going to potentially happen in the game or any sense of combat. But you build your character. The Dungeon Master builds the world.
And you take your character into different stories?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And your character therefore gets stronger or not?
Yes.
Yeah, you get stronger.
You get HP.
It's basically like, because, I mean, D&D is heavily influenced by Lord of the Rings. It's basically if you got to write all of what happened to you, you got to create a character, put them in the world of Lord of the Rings, and decide everything that you did. And so, like, if you had decided, oh, yeah, say you made Pippin, and you're like, I really want Pippin to be at Helm's Deep. And you could, like, choose, instead of, like, you guys going after Treebeard and trying to get all of the other Ents involved, you're like, no, I want to either go off and help Gandalf get the Rohirrim to come in, or just fight alongside my friends. And so now you're in Helm's Deep, and the whole story's changed. And, like, and so it's... And you roll dice essentially to see how well you succeed on the stuff you're trying to do.
Oh, really? Yes. Cool. You would genuinely like it.
And just to make the point for anyone who doesn't know Lord of Rings, in the actual Lord of Rings, Pippin did help in all those things.
Yeah.
And yes. Pippin was in every scene. If you look close enough.
Yeah. It's the story of Pippin. Yeah.
It really is. I feel like Billy, you playing Dungeons and Dragons now is the new goal for this.
Yeah.
We've got to get you back. You've got to get you playing Dungeons and Dragons.
It's really fun.
Honestly, I think you'd have a great time. I can see a halfling themed one shot coming up already.
I'll have a goal, but I don't want to be a halfling.
No, you don't need to be.
No. This is one of the questions I was going to ask you.
What's the strongest warrior that you can be?
So you could play as like a barbarian if you want to. They have a thing called rage, which is where they get to do like extra damage and things like that, because they fly into like a fiery, passionate rage until they've killed all of their opponents. So maybe like you could be a...
As an example...
I'm seeing Dragonborn vibes.
Maybe a Dragonborn vibes.
Of like the barbarian, speaking of Helm's Deep, the dude who runs in, like the crazy orc berserker who runs in there and blows up the wall, and Legolas just keeps shooting him and he will not go down. That's basically a barbarian. Yeah. Like you just take huge amounts of damage.
Give me some other
and are
options.
Really, really strong.
You can be a fighter, which is like
kind of a straightforward, sort of like a Gimli type. You can be any race you want within the game. So you could be a dwarf or an elf or a dragonborn or a halfling or a human or whatever. And there's a bunch of other ones. But you could be. It's basically like you're just really good at fighting. There's one, the paladin, where it's like you have divine powers. So you're really big and strong, but you're also infused with divine power from a deity, and you can smite. You use the deity's powers to like smite your enemies and stuff.
That one's really cool.
I feel like I'm getting rogues are my personal favorite types.
Always coming in for damage in the darkness.
Like a stealth archer. Who's a halfling monk?
monks.
Yeah,
I hate monks. I DM and Jeremy plays a monk.
A halfling
and
monk.
It is the most infuriating thing because they have so many very good abilities where they can stun your enemies and they just can't do anything for a little while, which is very...
Like they're not as kind of in your face and in the front line. But from kind of behind the front line, if they're being protected, they can basically stop the enemy from swinging their axe or throwing their sword around.
So it's the people around the table, like you're saying, stop the enemy. They're all on your side.
Yeah.
So why are you getting angry at monks if everyone's on your side?
Oh, so because I DM, so like I'm the dungeon master. I throw things at my opponents, and what happens is I throw something at Jeremy here, and then he goes, "Oh, I need you to roll this dice," and I roll it, and I fail because I always fail. My dice are always rubbish when I DM.
Okay,
and then my monster is like paralyzed in place because he kind of does like a cool Bruce Lee thing where he like punches my monster in like a certain few places, and then the monster kind of freezes up for a little while. And that is very infuriating for me. So that's why I dislike monks.
Well, there's definitely rules. It's not just the roll of the dice will dictate. You might say, I want to do this, but then when you roll the dice, it's like, well, you can't do that now.
But then that's the beauty of the game, is that you have a DM who will kind of guide you through that process. They kind of, what usually happens if you have a new player, they come along, you bring your D20, which is a little 20-sided dice, and that's kind of good to start you off. And then a DM, usually you'll describe what you want to do, and a DM goes, okay, you might want to roll this or have a look at this ability, and sort of so you get very like introduced to it like in a nice fun way where it's not too like realistically you don't have to look. I don't think I've ever actually picked up like a player's handbook or a dungeon master's guide and combed through pages. I've sometimes referred back to what's that particular rule, but like otherwise I've just just enjoyed playing with my friends in a very kind of fun kind of free form way. So
do you ever DM?
Nah, I've not. That was my intention, was to DM. And then when I started to look into the player's handbook and started to try and get, a group of friends, Nigel and Carrie and Jackie, people that had to do it, I realised that the workload was a lot as a DM. Mm-hmm. And also, you can't play as the DM. You're on the outside.
You're on
the, looking
you're seeing,
in.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to play.
Another question.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I just thought, is there a Dungeons and Dragons for the Star Trek universe?
Yes.
Yes, there are all kinds.
I think Starfinder is basically sci-fi oriented TTRPG. It's like there's a lot of sci-fi themed tabletop role-playing games.
Well, I would like to do that if that could be organized.
Yeah.
We will absolutely organize that for you, Billy. 100%.
I would like to do that.
Yes. I'm very excited for this.
Let's I'm pretty sure there's an actual Star Trek TTRPG as well, like one specific.
Brilliant.
Yeah, we're gonna have to find the best one and we'll send you an invite.
One, and,
you
can, and then let's all do it. Let's
all do it.
Let's, that'll be fun.
Absolutely, let's all do this. That sounds very, very exciting.
Billy's gonna have to be the captain.
Billy, you can absolutely be the captain. I love the idea that one guy who's never played a TTRPG is going to be the captain, and we're going to be stuck on this ship, and we're like, no, please don't, and we end up flying into like the sun.
No, right. As long as we all have an amazing crew, who would you like to be?
I think I'd like to be maybe kind of like the sage of the ship.
Right.
So maybe he's a little bit of a medic mixed with a little bit of a seer almost. So you're like science,
and maybe
you're
quite empathetic. Yeah, that's why you're a good healer.
Yeah, yeah. So you're very like science. We're going to do it like this. And then sometimes I come over to you and say, Captain.
Yes?
I have a bad feeling about that area that we're
Where do you have the feeling?
Here, right here, my son.
Oh, that's a bad place.
Right.
See,
there.
It's basically written.
It's written itself.
There we go. There we go. It's ready. I'm gonna go with the Scotty. I'm gonna go with the engineer. That's what I want to do. I want to be the guy who gets us into warp drive. And when we take some shots, you're gonna be shouting at me down the thing like, get us back into hyperspace. Like that's what I want.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Why is the warp drive off? What?
He turned it off to save power.
Yeah, we had to save power, otherwise we wouldn't have any guns. We wouldn't have to shoot them.
Jeremy, who are you that you're just shouting into the intercom here?
Is there a munitions officer? Can I be a munitions officer?
Yes.
All right, yeah, I want to be munitions. So I'm in charge of the guns and everything.
Why are you shouting about the warp drive?
Look, I feel bad about the treatment that our technician has had on this mission, and so I'm trying to step in and be a friend to him by explaining, I understand that he gets nervous in these situations dealing with authority, so I'm just trying to help ease communication right now and say, look, he turned it off, it's a very important thing, we had to save power while we were floating above the planet.
Just so you know, I'm always a little annoyed with Jeremy.
Yeah.
Because in a previous story, he stole one of my girlfriends, and we butt heads a little bit. I don't like the whole weapons vibe that he's got. I'm more of a kind of philosophical guy. So you just keep your mouth shut and stay in your position. Just shut it, you! Shut it!
Yeah, shut it.
You blazing heart weakling! I'm going to go call Susie and ask her what she thought of it.
Ooh,
how much she enjoys being with me instead.
What do you feel about that?
Hit me where it hurts there, Jeremy.
I'm right into Susie.
Oh, wow, Yunasi, where are you on this ship?
I'm currently flapping because I'm looking through the rule book that I'm just about purchasing now.
Ooh,
it'll be coming.
Okay, we've got rule books.
Yes.
We're on it. We're on it now.
It has been purchased. Done.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
That is exciting. We're going to do this. We're going to make this happen. I'm very excited.
Well, there
this.
May even be like a Star Trek. I think there almost 100% is just a Star Trek TTRPG.
Yeah.
So we got to do some research to see which one would be best.
Which
but
is
there's
the best one.
Yeah.
There's also an Aliens one as well.
Ooh.
But apparently it's
that would be terrifying.
Like, ridiculously hard to run because it's just so blank. It's just ridiculously hard to run.
I should imagine it's very difficult.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
But I
wanted to stay on the D&D topic for a sec if I could, because actually, Dom, I knew about your obsession with insects beforehand, and I was kind of fascinated. I was watching you getting bitten by some ants earlier and thinking, well, that seems painful. But I was wondering if you could take any creepy crawly, any insect that maybe people didn't know about and turn it into a D&D monster, what would you pick? Like any obscure insect that has some weird, nasty ability. Like what would be the one thing you'd turn into what would strike fear into your heart if you were in that dungeon?
Well, it's not technically an insect. It's an invertebrate.
Mm-hmm.
But
that'll do. That's nice.
Scolopendra gigantea, which is the biggest centipede in the world. I mean, if that it didn't even need to be human size. Even if that was kind of the size of a dog, it would be one of the most terrifying animals on the planet. one of the fastest. Yeah, hello.
Like a what? Like a pug or like a Great Dane?
Even a pug.
Carry on.
Even a pug. Dane, wow. You'd be in real trouble. One of the fastest invertebrates in the world. It has little tiny hooks on each leg that it uses to grab hold of its prey. It has a flesh melting venom, extremely aggressive when it's close to its food. Great eyesight, great senses. It's been around for hundreds of millions of years.
Is this the one that you had on your show and you had it on a stick?
Yeah.
And it kept crawling towards you and then you grabbed the other end of the stick? Moving. You need to watch that episode if you haven't seen it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I was watching one earlier where you were poking this spider, saying how it was one of the most deadly spiders, and then it jumped at your cameraman, and I sat here and was like, ah! Yeah. I had to get out of there because I was like, I'm not doing this.
That's the Brazilian wandering spider, which interestingly, is
yeah, you were just poking it with a poking it with a stick, Tom.
No. I'm not sure if poking is the right word. But it's one of the most venomous spiders, one of the most dangerous spiders in the world because it's so fast. But interestingly, when it bites males, it causes uncontrollable erections for between 9 to 12 hours. And they're studying its venom to try and solve erectile dysfunction. So it is also medicinally important. But yeah, if it bites you, it has killed a lot of people, men and women, and the last 12 hours of your life, you'll have a raging stoner.
Wow.
That's kind of a mixed bag.
If you're going to go, you know what I mean? If you're going to go...
go out with a bang or go out banging, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, man, yeah. I can't wait for that to be a D&D monster. I don't want to DM that bit, though. describing that bit in too much detail. Oh dear, that's very funny. So a lot of the theme of our show is about making sort of the fantasy world more accessible for all people, making sure that everyone sees themselves represented, and hence the name Three Black Halflings. It was something that came to us when we felt like we wanted to see more people of colour in these spaces and things. And I was just interested to know, like, since you've started, like, actually working in the industry, let alone being a fan of the kind of industry at large, how have you seen that kind of change? Do you feel like it's got more accessible? Do you feel like it's changed with the introductions of things like social media, etc.? Like, I'm just fascinated to know what it's like from having been at sort of the heights of the industry for so long, how you've seen that kind of journey.
I think, like, letting your geek flag fly is much more embraced than it used to be. Certainly when I was in my kind of early teens and then, you know, up until my maybe mid-20s, the only accepted level of geekery for myself and for my friends was Manchester United. If you could name players from the 1960s or the 1970s or a goal that took place, that's fine. And it's okay to be a geek in that way. But you probably would want to keep it a little quieter if you had happened to read a whole compendium of fantasy books that you were really into. I think nowadays, with social media and with the blossoming of all of these conventions that Billy and I get invited to every so often, the acceptance of, you know, whatever you want to wear, whatever choices you want to make, whatever race of characters you want to identify with, as long as you're not harming anyone else's ability to be free, is completely accepted. I was astounded the first time I went to Comic-Con. I thought I was going to go to a comic book convention with some stands of comic books, maybe the occasional Stormtrooper, and that was it. And we showed up and it was Boba Fett and Gollum and Morgana and, you know, Medusa and all of these
and people probably dressed as you.
People dressed as us for sure. Any way that you wanted to express yourself, Comic-Con seemed to be a place to say, look, for this weekend, no judgment, do whatever you want. And I absolutely love that. And I think it has continued to blossom. Obviously, Lord of the Rings has been huge for that. But things like the Avengers, you know, what was the other thing I was going to mention? The Harry Potter world, people walking around with wands. That would probably be a bit of something that you would poke fun at 30 years ago. Nowadays, everyone talks about what house you're associated with in Harry Potter. So, yeah, it's all very healthy.
Yeah. Lots of energy.
And, of course, we live in a world where, you know, I think, you know, most people, we would hope, a huge majority of people is just trying to get to the place where, you know, where you're from, the colour of your skin, anything like that just doesn't matter. It's, you know, we're all trying to get rid of that, you know, hopefully. And I think sci-fi has been trying to kind of make that a thing for a long time. Getting back to Star Trek, you know, the whole thing is, you know, just because they're from there or they look like that or they're different from us or we're different from them, that shouldn't be a thing. And I think that's, you know, and I think it's a long journey and much longer than it should be, you know, for whatever reason. But we're all, I think, and I think lately more than ever, trying to kind of, you know, directly push against all these stereotypes and the kind of storytelling stereotypes that we're all trying to get rid of. And, you know, the quicker that comes, the better, you know. And I think it'll take hopefully this generation and not many more of young filmmakers and young storytellers to, you know, fight against that hard so that it becomes a historical, I can't believe that we used to do that, you know.
It's really interesting that you say about stereotypes, because I think it goes back to what you mentioned earlier, Dom, in that, like, it's about expression, right? Like, that's what, like, things like D&D, and I think now fantasy as a huge umbrella kind of genre has become. It's about people being able to express themselves in these, like, larger-than-life ways, being able to escape into something that is, like, truly epic and, you know, and outside of that kind of normal, that normal realm. And I think that the more we live in that place of stereotype, the more difficult and the less accessible it is for people, because if you only see yourself in that kind of stereotyped form, and that's for everyone, I think, you know, whether you're a white guy or a Chinese woman, or do you know what I mean? Like, I think if you see only yourself as stereotype, the chances are it probably doesn't that apply that much to you, because you're a very nuanced and interesting person. You know, there's more to you than just where you're from or the color of your skin or something like that. So.
And I remember doing a drama for a British TV show, and I was playing, you know, a Scottish character, and he's an alcoholic, and I'm like, does he have to, you know, does this have to, and then when it was, I said, well, can I play him not Scottish then? Can I play something else? Mm. And one of the writers said, they're sorry about this, but it's a sort of storytelling stereotype that they use in TV, where if there's a drunk, it's Scottish. If he's a thief, it's Liverpool. Right. I mean, just awful. Then you're like, you know, and the more you tell that story, the more it becomes real in someone's head.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, God, we need to stop doing this, you know?
Yeah.
All right.
I think there is an insecurity with a lot of people or a lot of societies to kind of box people in, put people in some sort of pigeonholing, and the more you are not willing to explain yourself in those situations or get boxed in, the easier it will be to do whatever you want. You know, I mean, I used to paint my nails at school. And the only kids that would give me hassle about painting my nails were clearly the kids that were probably a little interested in it as well, but they were a little bit too insecure to do it. I used to wear two watches at school, and people would just be like, what are you doing? What are you doing that for? What are you doing that for? And I remember just like years later thinking, that kid probably really wanted to do it, and they're threatened by the fact that you do it. And I would never explain it. I just go, well, I just like it. And, you know, wearing makeup or, you know, I remember going on holiday with my friends, went to Italy with a bunch of friends, four girls and a boy. And I put one of the girls' skirts on, and we were all kind of laughing and joking. And then we went out for dinner And I was like, I'm keeping this on, I like it. And my mate was like, you can't do that, you can't do that. I was like, why, what? Like, I'm on holiday. It doesn't matter. No one knows who I am. Even if they did know who I am, I'm still going to do it. Yeah. And I remember thinking, my mate Tom probably wants to put a skirt on as well. And he's looking at me going, oh, I want to do that. Just do it.
That looks so comfortable and you look pretty. God damn it.
It's free. It's cooling. There's airflow.
It's cool. Yeah.
Everything can breathe.
It's great.
Everything can breathe. It's not restrictive.
I like the Dom's
it's
always
a great
been
idea.
Like that. I remember once we went for dinner here in Los Angeles with a group of people, and Dom was late to dinner, which is strange because he used to wear two watches.
And I'm quite timely, no?
Yeah, very timely. And he turned up with a Darth Vader cloak on.
Yes.
And that's right. Yes. And I just thought, brilliant. Why not? He had the whole Darth Vader thing with the cloak. I was like, great. And he was on crutches because he just hurt his leg or something. So I walked into the restaurant and I thought, yes, why not?
Absolutely. There he is.
Why that really buy it if you're not going to wear it?
Yeah. Absolutely. That really reminds me. I remember I don't think I've ever actually said this out in public before. And it's one of those things where I regretted it at the time. And now I look back, I was like, good for you, young Jasper. I went to college one day just wearing, you know, Kick-Ass, the superhero, I went to college just dressed like that, like just in a in the green. I went to went to my drama class and everyone was looking at me like, what?
Brilliant.
Like, why? And I was just
you're
like
dressed,
this was in my cupboard and it was clean and
doesn't smell.
You like the way
so,
it looks.
So this is this
you're
is
not
it.
Nude.
This is it.
You're not breaking any laws. So what's the problem?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Bruce Lee, that kind of yellow. You know, one piece.
Yeah.
What would that be? A jumpsuit? Is that a jumpsuit?
Yeah, I think it's a jumpsuit.
Yeah.
No one's
or
telling Bruce Lee what he can and can't wear, so he does whatever he wants. That's become an iconic piece of style, you know? And he had the balls to do it because no one's going to give Bruce Lee hassle. We need more people like that doing those type of things. It makes it fun, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly, and that's exactly it. You need that's I think one of the biggest things that we tried to do on this show. It's about representation. It's about seeing yourself and seeing someone who represents you doing something like that, doing something bold, doing something brave, and kind of going, oh yes, like I love that. I want to embrace that. I want to get involved. I want to play Dungeons and Dragons or you know whatever it is, or you know, I want to get into Star Trek or whatever. You know, I'm sure there's little lads in Scotland who are probably like, oh, actually. No, I do like Star Trek now, because you know Billy Boyd said he likes Star Trek, so I like Star Trek.
There's an amazing documentary about the fandom of Star Trek called Trekkies that Billy and I watched a few times when we were in New Zealand, and the lady who played Uhura said that she met a black woman years later who had seen her in Star Trek, who had said to her mom, there's a black lady on the TV, but she's not playing a maid or a slave or a servant. And that lady was Whoopi Goldberg, and it completely changed the direction of her life. So the influence of Star Trek is incredible for that inclusion.
Yeah. Yeah.
The original series had the first televised interracial kiss in the United States.
Yeah, that's
between
right.
Kirk and Uhura.
Wow.
Yeah. We're all big Whoopi fans on this show.
Ah, she's brilliant.
No, we do have.
I mean, I don't know how you couldn't be.
She's brilliant.
You're absolutely right. If we only see our race or our people, whatever, in one way or a couple of ways on stories, then you get drawn in. We need to get rid of the stereotypes. One of the reasons I got into film was I saw Bill Forsyth's Gregory's Girl movie. Mm-hmm. Because before that, I didn't think Scottish people were in film or were involved in film or could make films. And when I saw that in the cinema, I thought, wow, there's a story about people that I understand. This isn't an American high school. This is a comprehensive in Scotland, you know? And I thought, there is stories about, you know, people that I know. So, I mean, we have to always be pushing that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do one of our, when we play Dungeons and Dragons, we play it in a setting called the Wagadu Chronicles, which is like a Africa-based setting. And it's basically, and literally the guy who made it, who we've had the pleasure of talking to a few times, said, what if J.R.R. Tolkien was born in Africa and was inspired by Africa. What if Lord of the Rings was made about sort of Africa? And it's an incredible setting. And I feel like we always get people sort of saying how refreshing it is and how amazing just to see a different color palette. Do you know what I mean? Like even little things like that, just to different weapons, different music. Like there's less lutes, more drums. Do you know what I mean?
More drums, always more drums.
More
less
drums.
Lutes. Less
loots, yeah. We hate the loot on the show.
I really hate the loot. I am true.
I like loot, but I agree it's overused.
It's really overused. Don't hear it anymore.
It's a niche conversation now.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously you guys are here to talk a little bit about The Friendship Onion, which is your new podcast, which I am so excited to listen to. So I thought, like, why don't we kick off this conversation? Give us like the elevator pitch. What's like the why should people listen to The Friendship Onion? Other than just the fact that it's you guys and it sounds great.
Just boredom, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's basically me and Dom have been hanging out together since Lord of the Rings, and we didn't know each other before that. We met on the set, but we have been, you know, great friends since. Go on holiday together, you know, hang out together. So we're kind
is it
of,
true that you named your band after Dom? Is that true? I think I read that somewhere.
Well, no, I have a band called Bee Cake. Yeah. And that happened because I was working once, I can't remember what on, and Dom was on vacation, he was on holiday, and he was sending me pictures from where he was.
Tangier!
And one of the pictures was a cake, and it was covered in bees. And he said that this cake had pollen on it, and it attracted the bees into the bakery, and people were still buying it. They were just knocking the bees off and cutting a slice.
Whoa.
And when he sent the picture to let me see this, he put under it Bee Cake, and I was trying to get a name for a band at the time, so we called
Amazing.
It Bee Cake.
Oh, amazing. I love that. Sorry, carry on. I just wanted to hear that. That was true.
Yeah, I think, well, like Billy was saying, we spend a lot of time with each other having inane conversations about, you know, random things. And I think probably getting on for a year or maybe even a little bit more, we had both said, well, you know, if we do this for an hour and we cut it into 45 minutes of the stuff that we like the most, that's a podcast that is similar to all the other podcasts that we listen to, which is people whose personality we like welcoming us in for a 45-minute chat where we can, you know, have a cup of coffee and a slice of cake and just... you do a lot of driving in LA. You know, the average drive in LA is, you know, between half an hour and 40 minutes. And, you know, sometimes you just need something to take the edge off, and I very often listen to nice, friendly, welcoming, silly, comedic podcasts.
Nice, very nice. So I was wondering if there is like something that you can share, obviously no spoilers, but is there like any particular like episode or is there any particular moment maybe that you've done you've recorded with The Friendship Onion that you're particularly excited for people to hear? Is there anything this is going to be out the day before I think the first episode is due to drop, but I was wondering if there's anything in particular that you're particularly excited for people to hear and to listen to.
Well, true to form, Billy and I both like the piece that we think our producers are trying to cut out of the show because we like the silliness, we like the stuff that comes out of left field, and Billy came up with what I thought was a really good idea for the show a while ago called Billy and Dom Eat the World, where we ask people to suggest to us something from their part of the world or possibly their childhood or their city that is not very well known outside of that city that is considered to be a delicacy or a curiosity or something to try, drink, eat, whatever, and we review it. So we've been doing that on the show, which Billy and I get a huge giggle out of. And,
can I make a suggestion? Can I suggest something from my city? Because this is something that I don't think most people know. But Cincinnati
is the, in terms of the amount of chili eaten per capita, the chili capital of the world.
Wow.
And we have our own, in contrast to like the kinds of chili that you would get in other parts of the United States, where it's usually a lot chunkier and it's like influenced a lot of times by like Mexico and stuff like that. Our chili is very Greek influenced. So Cincinnati chili is kind of its own brand. And there's like almost like a gang war in the city over which of the main two chili restaurant chains you prefer. There's Skyline chili and Gold Star chili. And like people will, to me, honestly, they taste pretty similar, but like there are people who will like refuse
Don't say it too loud,
to
Jeremy.
enter a Gold Star because they're such big Skyline fans. And it's absolutely worth trying. It's different than what you'd normally expect from
but
chili.
But what do you eat?
But
what do they sell? They don't just sell a chili.
It's usually like on a hot dog. It'll either be on,
chili,
in Cincinnati,
chili.
They put it. Yeah. Mm. So it's usually like put on like a hot dog with like cheese and onions and mustard. They call it a coney, or they'll sell it as part of like on noodles, like spaghetti noodles. So you have spaghetti noodles, then you put the chili on top and then like cheese and maybe beans and stuff.
Mm. Then we should do it. That sounds like a taste test.
It's a great one. But
blindfolded.
How would we get hold of it here in LA? Can you buy it from a local supermarket? Like how would we get
it? I think you could order it online. And if worst comes to, if you're unable to find it, I could probably buy a can and send it to you.
Okay.
In fact, by which I mean I could definitely buy a can and send it to you.
We'll get blindfolded. We'll taste each one, and we'll tell you which is the best.
We'll let you know.
Okay, we're going to have to arrange for these cans to get delivered. That sounds like a great segment. Do not let your producers cut it.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
We're always my partner, she's like our producer for this show, and kind of and I'm always kind of campaigning like no, leave the stupid stuff in.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, but it's like half an hour, and I'm like yeah, it's fine. I know we went completely off piece and didn't talk about Dungeons and Dragons for like a whole episode, but that's fine.
It's what the people are coming for.
May I also make a suggestion?
Go on.
Yeah.
You should try akota. We have them in South Africa, in Johannesburg. So it's a akota slice of a loaf of bread, right? And you take the bready bit out. Then you put in some chips inside. You put in some baloney or baloney. Then you have to try and find acha. Probably couldn't find it at like an Indian restaurant. Mango acha. Then you must put a Russian sausage. So you could use like a Frankfurt or something like that. Put that there. Then tomato sauce, some onions, some chilies. Then you put the bread back on top. Then you squeeze that and you eat it. If you want to take it further, my mother used to enjoy wrapping that in cling film and taking a car and reversing over it slowly so it all mushes. And then you kind of eat, you just open up the bucket and eat that.
It's the greatest thing I've ever heard. Are you in South Africa just now?
Oh, no, I'm in the UK now, but I'm from South Africa, yeah.
I think all three of us are usually based in the UK, but I fled the UK once the second lockdown started. So I've been in Cincinnati, Ohio since like last November. But normally I'm based in London.
I love that your mum reverses over it with her car. That is brilliant.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Brilliant.
I just love the idea of watching your mum go outside with food. And like, what are you doing with that? Oh, I'm just running over it. Don't worry.
Like, you wouldn't just roll it. That would be too easy.
I don't know. It's the car. She has to do the car thing.
I love that.
Wow. Maybe the treads add something else to it, like the uneven roll it, like the uneven flattening.
Apparently it was something that stopped at university and she's never stopped doing it. So...
Wow, that's so incredible.
We're hoping to do this podcast at some of these conventions that we're lucky enough to be invited to over the year. And I think that this Billy and Dom Eat the World section might be one of the most popular elements to watch live, because you're seeing us in real time react to something. We don't know how we're going to react to something. It doesn't always need to be tasty. Sometimes it can be slightly strange, you know, so... We will keep in the weird stuff. I'm not comparing ourselves to the Beatles here, because that would be a fool's
errand.
There's
only two of us.
Yeah, there's
you
only two
of us. You heard it here first. Better than the Beatles. The friendship onion.
But what I, as a massive Beatles fan, and this is another thing that we both nerd out on a lot, the times for me in my old age that I enjoy the Beatles are the unpolished moments, are the throwaway moments, them plugging in a guitar and George says something to Ringo,
or off mic, you hear a producer say something and John Lennon kind of barks back. I love the songs. I love the polished elements of the songs, but it's the bits in between that I'm the most intrigued by. And I think, I hope that's what we're hoping to keep in with the podcast. Of course, we're going to have some fun and we're going to do segments, but we like the little gaps in between where we don't know what we're going to say. I'm sure that's how you guys feel about your pod.
Yeah. I think that's all of what the podcast chaos. Is. I think that chaos. I think that's been the I think the reason why we've had some success is because people just vibe off of us being silly and weird and going on silly tangents about whatever we feel like at the time.
Chaos and tangents. Could you hold the floor for a minute while I go for a pee?
Yeah, I'll try.
It's just right behind us here, and I've drunk too much of this.
Excellent.
You can ask me secret things about Billy while he's gone.
I'm listening in. I'm listening.
Dom, if you'll permit me, I did actually have a bit of an off-piece question to ask you specifically.
Look, he's listening.
As I follow you on Instagram, and I can see that you're a big Man United fan.
Yeah.
We don't need to talk about the team that I support. I am also an avid football fan and have consumed a lot of football. And I just was genuinely interested because I know also we do have a couple of football fans who listen to this show, as a couple of them reached out to me on Instagram and I now talk to them on match day, which is very, very fun. Mm. But I wanted to know, how long until you close the gap on City? What's your honest opinion?
You know, it's tough trying to answer that question because there's so many moving parts. I think if you look at the financial, setup at both of those teams, Manchester United was bought by American owners who put about $800 million of debt immediately into our club. Manchester City was bought by, I believe, is he a Saudi?
Sheikh in Saudi Arabia.
Who invested £2 billion into the team immediately. So from a financial point of view, we have $800 million debt. They have $2 billion in profit. It's difficult.
And not to mention investment in the local area as well. Yes, like if you go round by the Etihad now, there's so much of the area has been renovated and built houses. And I think someone said to me the Old Trafford has not been closed for renovation since the Glazers took over, which is baffling.
So there's some kind of financial issues that we have to get on top of. I think even alongside all those financial issues, Manchester United have done incredibly well with players like Mason Greenwood, Scott McTominay, Jesse Lingard, Marcus Rashford. You know, I think we're doing really well. Obviously, signing Cavani is huge for us. I think in the summer...
Wow, what a signing he's been. Yeah.
He's been brilliant. I think in the summer, maybe we go kind of a full court press for someone like Jadon Sancho, possibly Harry Kane, maybe Haaland. Maybe we need a good defender. I think maybe in two or three seasons, we might get to a point where we can come after Manchester City, because by that point, they might have lost Pep Guardiola. There'll be an aging team.
Hopefully, for the rest of us.
Yeah, they're a juggernaut, and it's strange to think of them as a juggernaut, because all the way through my youth, up until probably my early 30s, they were not a threat, and they have very recently become a significant threat.
Yeah, our two teams used to battle it out at the top.
I'm
cursed with being an Arsenal fan.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. It's rough.
My mother would literally disown me if I wasn't an Arsenal fan.
I'm more of a tennis guy, personally.
I like some tennis.
But that was my itch that I wanted to scratch. I couldn't let you guys leave without asking a football question. But honestly, this has been so fantastic getting to talk to you guys. We have to do this Star Trek D&D game, because I think this will be very, very fun.
Just because I know Billy is going to go home, and alongside him and his son, they're going to have a look at this online. So what's the name of the Star Trek based kind of D&D game?
So there's Star Trek Adventures, the one that I suggested, which I'm not going to buy now.
Yeah, I think the one that we'd mentioned was Starfinder, which isn't specifically Star Trek based, but it's sci-fi. So you could easily fit, I think, elements of Star Trek into that. But Unati's saying something that I think that are Star Trek specific.
Yeah, so I found Star Trek Adventures RPG Core Rulebook.
So Star Trek Adventures, actually.
I think you should stop buying things. You've bought about three things since we've been on.
This is just what Unati does. Like, she absolutely, if she finds something that she likes, she's like, yep, okay, I'm gonna have that. She likes to collect things.
I have so many books. So many books.
Oh, wow.
That's good.
So many
books. And you've written them all?
Hmm?
Yes.
Extremely prolific writer.
I love it.
Yeah.
You mentioned Harry Potter. She actually ghost wrote that.
Yeah. Wow. I'm really pissed off at Raleigh.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons.
Complete falling out.
Yeah.
Before the reasons. Series ended. That's why it had to end.
Amazing. So yeah, please tell us, where can we find the Friendship Onion I don't know if you're going to be on social media or things like that. Where can they follow you, I guess, to make sure if there is anyone who is listening to this who isn't already following you guys, they of course should be. So yeah, tell us where we can find all your stuff.
So just follow us on Instagram or wherever you follow people, and also The Friendship Onion, and listen to it wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe.
Yeah, that's not really important. And also, if you want to send us a voice message of anything that you want us to talk about on the show, and maybe you'll make it onto the show, you can go to www.speakpipe/The Friendship Onion. I memorized.
Wow,
it.
Well done, though.
Tell us
very
anything,
impressive.
Anything that you want us to talk about. Maybe you consider yourself to be the biggest Lord of the Rings fan in the world. Maybe there's an element of nerddom that you want us to explore. Leave a message. Maybe you'll make it on the
show. Or there's some local food that you want us to eat. Yeah. Anything like that. Mm. And what if they wanted to email us, Dominic?
Oh, yeah, you can email us at the friendship.
No.
You go on.
Friendship Onion. There's no the on the email.
friendshiponion@castmedia.com, and that's cast with a K.
For kick.
With a K.
Email us. Tell us what you want the show to be about. Maybe we'll make some changes.
Yes.
Of course we will.
Yes. Amazing. So make sure you go and check out The Friendship Onion, which I think if you're listening to this anything other than a day after it is already out, anything other than the day, it will be out. The first episode will be out right now. If you're listening to this on the day, you have but 24 hours to wait until The Friendship
Prepare
Onion
yourselves.
Will be in your ears.
There might even be a thing about fools in space traveling around in a Star Trek universe.
Yeah, you just never know. You never know.
And then you guys will have influenced that.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes. That's all we can hope for.
I always reverse over anything I'm eating now.
Yes.
I don't care what it is.
Just
a bowl
back
of
up.
Oatmeal, anything. I'm going over this, guys. Everything is better flat.
Everything is better flat. Absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for being on. If you have just listened to this episode and you haven't listened to any of us before, you can find us at TB Halflings. That's where we'll be on the social media. We also have a Patreon as well, which is patreon.com/TB Halflings. If you want some more stuff, including the video version of this podcast will be available on that. So if you want to see these glorious faces that I'm looking at right now, then you can indeed. They're doing some lovely faces right now at me. So yes, make sure you go ahead and check that out. Thank you very, very much for listening to this great episode of TB Halflings. I've had an absolute blast. Thank you, Dominic Monaghan and Billy Boyd, for coming along. And we'll see you very soon. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
Bye-bye.